When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Looks like Kyrsten Sinema is exiting stage left. I had a big announcement on Tuesday that she was leaving. She was not going to run for re-election. She was bowing out, probably because it wasn't looking good for her. Was not looking good in Arizona for the senator. And look, you know, she did this to herself. I mean, for me, you know, if you said, you know, what do you think of Kyrsten Sinema? I remember the Dipsy Doo dance she did, where she thumbs down the increase in the minimum wage. Yeah, that sticks with me. You didn't need to do the whole little dance and the whole little display with the weird little outfit. Didn't need to do that. That tells me not so much on the side of working people. Also, kind of the fly in the ointment on a lot of things. Now, her spiel, she gave a 3-minute video on social media on, you know, she went to Washington for compromise and, you know, she's proud of the, you know, work she's done. And look, you do that when you're going to possibly run for president, because I watched the speech and I'm going, well, this is a nice way to bow out and say, you know, Washington's broken and, we've just gotten more partisan. And, you know, for me, I'm going, okay, you know, where's she cashing in next? And then I saw a tweet from the No Labels people. Yeah. Those folk, they tweeted out the entire No Labels movement. There's a movement of No Labels. Just a couple of rich people who are trying to figure out how to also be the fly in the ointment. They write, the movement is grateful for Senator Sinema. Her courageous leadership, the worse Washington has gotten, the more she has risen to the occasion, they wrote. She led the Senate passage of major bipartisan legislation like the 2021 Infrastructure Bill, the CHIPS Act, and most recently the bill to secure our borders and get aid for our foreign allies. She's a voice of common sense and civility at a moment when America desperately needs more of both. And I read that and I'm going, yeah, I know where she's going. Could we see a Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, hey, I need attention campaign? Because understand, the both of them, I believe the both of them, it's about the attention. It's about, you know, having that power of people pandering and you know, donations and you know, that. So we'll see. Now, just so you know, No Labels has not put her out in front. This is just my gut reaction going, seems interesting. Seems like, well, timing. Because she was never going to win re-election in Arizona. That wasn't going to happen. Because people there, like many people across the country, frustrated that she held up a lot of stuff that could have gotten life better for a lot of people. Now, is she right that, you know, we've become more partisan? Yeah, out of necessity. Do we want more people in the center? Yeah, sort of. But when you have things that need to get done, being the one who's always holding up the progress or killing that progress, that's going to get you in the center. And that's where she ended up. So we'll see. Will she be the one that No Labels cons into running their campaign? I don't know. We'll see. But the big news Tuesday, the Biden administration and Joe Biden. Joe Biden tweeted out, today I'm launching a strike force on unfair and illegal pricing to crack down on corporations who break the law while keeping prices high for American consumers. And look, he said we're going to put all of the powers of government, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Justice and their arm, going to get those together, going to get the agencies of government working together to go after these gougers, these people who have been, call it what it is, screwing over the American people. Now, you know, I talked to some of my friends who have taken the simplistic route going, you know, it's all Joe Biden's fault that we have inflation. You know, we spent money on, you know, you've heard it. They gave $1,400 to people. You know, we're wasting all this money on infrastructure. We love potholes in the roads and bridges that collapse. We want more of it. No, that's the argument that we're spending money. And not the argument that corporate America has grown too powerful, that for decades now they've had their way to consolidate, to become so big that they're almost uncontrollable and that there's no competition. You know, conservatives used to believe in competition. Now, my free market folks losing their mind over the fact that Biden is now going to be, you know, saying, look, we're going to be the cop on the beat again. We're going to promote competition. We're going to promote the ability of consumers to be, protected in an economy. We're going to go after the gouging, the junk fees, the surprise fees, the manipulation of markets. We're going to go after that. And consolidation as well. They said, you know, look in the food sector. They're going to support, you know, with some funding, you know, people to get involved in different parts of the food market. You know, farmers and ranchers and help lower prices for consumers. This is all part of that. Also, on the healthcare front, you know, in his press release, they were talking about Health and Human Services, the fact that they've rejected more than 1,000 Medicare Advantage TV marketing ads in just 1 year because they were misleading. They were making a whole bunch of things that, you know, maybe they're true, maybe they're not. But what they are is they're getting more people to taking on privatized Medicare than the good old-fashioned traditional Medicare. And then you get to when you actually need it and you go, oh, well, sorry, that's not covered. Or sorry, you're going to have to pay more for that. Surprise! And look, our economy's been rigged on surprise. So to hear Biden say, you know, we're going to finally take on some of this stuff. We're going to crack down on credit card companies that gouge you if you miss a payment or if you're late or something. We're going to take that on. Or, you know, all those places that you go to check out and oops, surprise, there's more fees. You know, just the other day, my wife is going to see our daughter perform in the drum line that she's in. The percussion band in Virginia. And my wife wants to get a hotel down near Richmond and you know, spend time because she doesn't want to drive down and back in the same day. So I'm looking at hotels and I go on the websites and, you know, name, I'm not going to say which one, I'm not going to promote it, but it's one of those, come here and we'll look at all the hotels. So I go, oh, here's a good one. Let's look at this. So I go through the checkout process. And at the end, there's like another $30 in fees. Doesn't say what the fees are. Have no idea. There's the taxes. We know what the taxes are. Taxes are clearly written. And you expect that. But it's the fees. And I'm going, I don't even know what the fees are for. So I X'd out of that. And then I went to another one. And not only were there fees, there was like a resort fee. And I'm going, it's a hotel. I didn't know it was a resort hotel. And this is the kind of stuff that has to become more front and center. If we're going to truly move towards free market principles, having that information, that's what makes it a free market. Ensuring that everything is front and center, making sure that there are no shocks and surprises, and that there's someone on your side, kind of important to me. So seeing Biden do some of this, I say it's about time. Now, I've been saying Congress should have been doing this for a couple of years. Coming out of the pandemic, seeing the greed and the massive inflation that has happened to us, saying, hey, senators, where are you doing the investigations into this stuff? Why aren't you doing anything to stop it? And that's the frustrating part of this, it's finally come down to the president, you know, coming out with this strike force. And about time. So for me, I'm all in favor of strike force. We most certainly need it. I want to hear your thoughts. Have you seen opportunities of being cheated by, well, corporate America outside of the greedflation of, hey, we're making record profits, but we still got to raise the prices and cut those wages on those workers? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Julie Hedrick is going to be here to talk about what's going on at American Airlines and the flight attendants fight for, well, better wages, hours, conditions. Back after this. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, American Airlines flight attendants picketed on Wall Street during American Airlines 2024 Investor Day meeting, where the company touted their goal of to care for people on life's journey. Which evidently, and this is weird, is a registered trademarked slogan. I gotta think the workers who are out there picketing on the picket line would question the company's commitment, considering they're working for wages that were last negotiated a decade ago. Yeah, 2024, the last time their wages were negotiated. And here to share some thoughts on Monday's event and, well, where this could be heading and hopefully doesn't. But I asked Julie Hedrick to come talk with us. Julie's the national president of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. She represents 27,000 flight attendants at American Airlines. Their website, APFA.org. Julie, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for having me on today.
So Monday you have this event. You got people out on Wall Street saying, hey, treat us better. Tell me about the day.
All right. Well, first off, that was Monday. But on Friday here at American Airlines was Employee Appreciation Day. And American Airlines put out this, like, we have a culture of appreciation, right, for their employees. I can tell you our flight attendants today do not feel appreciated. And that was clear on Monday, as we had many flight attendants out picketing with us on Wall Street to basically push back on a company that's there for Analyst Day, their first Analyst Day in 7 years, and touting about the 260 aircraft that they are putting an order for. And our flight attendants want them to invest in us, in the flight attendants first, before they are investing in an order for 260 aircraft, yeah, right? And ISM had all of the top executives there that day making their presentation on what a great company American Airlines is. And we were definitely out there telling everybody that would listen to us a different story. what really is happening at American Airlines today.
I got to think American Airlines is appreciative of your members, appreciative of the fact that they haven't had to give them a raise in all these years, and that they're making a lot of profit that they can then, you know, plow back into new fancy airplanes. And look, we want them to invest. I want companies to do really well. But the people who make that profit, your members, the folks who do the actual work in making people's lives better on that journey, maybe you take care of them too.
Absolutely. We are waiting for that. And we are tired of waiting. I can tell you, every flight I am on, the flight attendants that when I'm talking to them, they're like, we are ready to go on strike. We can't wait any longer. Our flight attendants are suffering, to say the least. Our new hire flight attendants make a gross of $27,000. And you know, we are based in 10 of the most expensive cities across this country. So that doesn't pay the rent. It surely doesn't put food on the table. It is not enough to live. And this company has really been taking advantage of the fact that many of our flight attendants have second and third jobs. Many are living at home with their parents. And actually, we've got flight attendants who've been living in their cars. It's totally unacceptable.
But as I understand, Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, the upper management, your upper level folks, the people who aren't taking care of the customers, they've actually rewarded themselves quite well, haven't they?
Oh, yes. We haven't gotten their bonuses for this year yet. But I can tell you last year, the bonuses up until, and this is like middle management and up, they got like 60% of their salary. Some of them did. We don't know what the top got. We don't have the information on that. But as you probably know, Robert Isom took a $2.75 million bonus last year, as he has flight attendants who haven't had a raise in 5 years. We negotiated our rates back in 2014. And so you can imagine what it is like trying to live in these cities where rent has just about doubled in some of them. Right. And actually, we don't have one city in our system any longer that's affordable for rent.
And again, you know, I'm sure he appreciates your members working for poverty wages so that he can enrich himself. But so this leads us to where does this go? I mean, you know, at some point, this is an untenable situation. The workers, you know, can't. I'm sure you've got a turnover problem that needs to be addressed. I'm sure you've got a lot of things that need to be addressed. What's going on? I mean, I know there's negotiations happening. I know you're asking for the ability to possibly strike down the road. Where are we? Where is this going?
All right. So where we're at today is next week, we are going to be in Washington, D.C., our entire negotiating team with our lead negotiator. And we are going to be making our case to the National Mediation Board in person. This is the second time we have asked for a release from these negotiations because we definitely feel we are at an impasse. They have passed one economic proposal to us. And all this time, we have passed two, and we're waiting for a second economic proposal from them. And the last time they passed a proposal was back in September. So we definitely feel we're at an impasse. We have narrowed the issues. We know our flight attendants need raises. They need improvements to their work rules, and we can't wait any longer. Yeah. So next week, we're really hopeful that the National Mediation Board will hear us, and they will release us so that we can get into our 30-day cooling off period and actually be able to strike if that's what it's going to take for us to get the contract we deserve.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't come to that. But if you have to, you have to. You know, as I say, strikes are always the last arrow in the quiver, but you got to have that arrow. It's got to be there in the event that negotiations aren't moving forward. But here's the thing that gets me. As someone who has flown and someone who sees what your members do and what they go through, you know, I got to tell you, you know, the poverty level wages that haven't, as you've pointed out, were last negotiated over a decade ago. I don't know how people do these jobs, and good on your members for doing it, but I don't know how people do it. I just don't.
Well, I can tell you this, like I fly every week back and forth. I live in Northern California and I fly to Dallas every week. So I'm talking to at least 8 flight attendants every week, but usually I try and get out in the field whenever I can. And I've come across flight attendants who have a dollar in their pocket. I had a flight attendant, a dollar in his pocket for 9 days. He said, I don't have money to eat. It is totally unacceptable. We are helping our flight attendants to get food stamps. We are trying to help them in any way we can. But at the end of the day, This company is failing. They are failing their employees. I know we've got employees who've gotten other contracts here recently, but I will tell you, they've told me they voted yes because they couldn't wait any longer if they voted no. They had to get an improvement in their wages. And so our flight attendants, we are trying to do everything we can to help them through this time frame, but they're having to make tough decisions. They want to stay, but they also know they cannot live on these wages for much longer.
Yeah. Now, again, I go back to that trademarked, and it seems it's trademarked. It's got the little R right there next to care for people on life's journey. How is this caring for people? And I know, you know, sometimes we don't think of workers as people, but how is this caring for those folks?
Listen, our management team is caring for themselves. That's it. They are not caring for us. And I can tell you, if you went out and you talked to probably thousands of our flight attendants, it's going to be hard to find one that is going to tell you that they feel cared for by this company. It's a really sad state right now. I'm hopeful that we'll get this done soon. We have to. Yeah. And that's why we're at the National Mediation Board. We can't wait any longer. You know, 5 years without a raise, you know, I know there's other Americans out there that are dealing with the same thing we are and having to worry about how they're going to pay the rent, how they're going to get food on their table. It's totally unacceptable.
No, it is unacceptable. So on Monday, as you're out there on the picket line, you know, with the investor class walking in and out, what kind of response did they get from them? Because I got to imagine not all of them are just all about, hey, more for me and, well, screw you, tough luck, better luck next time. Some of them have got to be going, hey, we want this company run better so that it makes this profit continually. What kind of response did you get on Monday?
We didn't get any response from them. We didn't see them, which is not unusual. We saw a lot of our passengers, a lot of public, and I can tell you, they support us. They were definitely out there to support us, telling us to keep up the fight, to get what we deserve. And I will say a lot of them were talking about our boarding pay, because now the public does recognize that we do not get paid our hourly rate while we are boarding the aircraft, while they are all boarding the aircraft. And they're out there now basically chanting with us that we need boarding pay. So
which is insane to me, Julie. I got to be honest. You're working but not getting paid. How is that possible? I mean, I guess.
You know, how we got paid started a long time ago.
No, because right? I'm thinking about truck drivers. You know, most truck drivers don't get paid for their pre-trips, only when the wheels are turning. And I've often made the analogy that, you know, airlines and the trucking industry are similar. You know, one's just got wings and the other one's riding. They both abuse employees in very similar ways. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised that the flight attendants don't get paid for the boarding process, the security process. I guess I shouldn't be shocked by that, but I am.
Listen, our days are very long. The majority of our days are 12, 13-hour days. We can go up to 15 if we're just flying domestic, right? If we're flying international, much longer than that. And we're only guaranteed, like a 12-hour day, we're only guaranteed 6 hours of our hourly rate, okay? So a lot of times you'll see flight attendants in the airport, sitting around, waiting for their next flight. That's because we have a lot of 2 and 3 hour sit times that we're sitting there not getting paid our hourly wages. And so that is why when people look at our wages, they're kind of trying to understand. When you look at our hourly rate, it looks a little different. But that is because we are not paid for a lot of the day when we are on duty.
Wow. I'm ready to go on strike. I got to be honest with you. I hear this and, you know, as someone who's been very fortunate throughout my life to be a unionized truck driver, there are a lot of things that happen in the non-union sector. I'm going, guys, you should be striking over. But hearing this is one of those things that yeah, absolutely. So what are the chances do you think that you're going to get this relief that you're seeking? And what are the chances do you think that that this will awaken American to get to the table and to actually negotiate? Because look, allowing the strike to possibly happen doesn't mean you're going to go on strike, but the threat of it has got to be something that's going to put some juice into negotiations, I think, right?
Absolutely. We need that pressure on this company to get this deal done. And we really want to get a contract. We, you know, I say this all the time. Our goal isn't for us to go on strike. Our goal is for us to get a contract that we deserve, but we will do whatever it takes to get that contract. And we are not going to give in to something less than what we deserve. And that's basically what this company wants us to do. We have shown up to many events before this. We've had 8 picketing events in the last year and a half across the country, worldwide, our last one with over 100,000 flight attendants that belong to unions. And we're going to keep on it as much as we can and as long as we have to until we get the contracts we deserve. Yep. As you probably know, this is not just about American Airlines flight attendants. We have Alaska, United, Southwest. We are all in negotiations right now. And of course, Delta is non-unionized, but we're working on that. So I will say it's not just about American Airlines flight attendants. It's about flight attendants across this country who are, we're all dealing with the same thing. None of us. Basically, what's happening is these CEOs have devalued our job. And this happened during COVID. Okay, 5 years without a raise. That's what can happen to your wages when you haven't had a raise. And they're trying their hardest to keep our wages down this time and not let them get up. And that is why we are working together to make sure that doesn't happen.
Again, you know, that idea of solidarity, everybody involved in pushing. So with that in mind, last question I've got for you. What can I do to help? What can our listeners and viewers do to help? What can, you know, people do? What if the flying public do? What are the marching orders?
Well, listen, first off, thank you so much for having me on the show today. This helps just getting our word out there. I will say, like I said yesterday, when our passengers are out there and they're chanting because they think we should get paid during boarding pay or boarding time, that helps us also. Our passengers have been very supportive. Everyone in the media has been supportive, getting the word out about flight attendants, about what these CEOs are trying to do, devaluing the job, trying to make sure that it's no longer a career for people to stay in for many years. I've been a flight attendant for 41 years, and I can tell you, it would be really hard for a flight attendant today to do this for that long because of what's happening at these airlines. It's not just American, it's across the industry, and it is time that we change. So we've seen a lot of support out on the picket line every time we're out there. And I can, with social media today, one of the best things we see now is when our CEO puts out anything on social media about American Airlines or Robert Isom, our passengers weigh in. They go in and they're like, give your flight attendants a contract that they deserve, right? Give them a raise. So that's very helpful.
No, it's what they earn. Look, if your CEO is putting money in his pocket, some of that should trickle down to the pockets of the people who actually do the work. And not just boarding pay should they get, but hazard pay as well. Because I got to tell you, since the pandemic, I see a lot of craziness going on, especially because of social media. So your members, they earn every penny that they earn, and they deserve more. But Julie, I appreciate you taking time for us. One day longer, one day stronger. I hope you'll come back with some good news down the road. But thanks so much.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to come back, and I'll let you know how it goes next week at the National Mediation Board.
Looking forward to it. Julie Hedrick, I appreciate you taking time for us. Want to hear your thoughts. Can you believe that? You know, they don't get paid while they're greeting people, seating them, doing all of the, putting the bags overhead. And all, not a dime. That's insane. Want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com for our Free Speech TV audience. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time for our radio affiliates across the country. Quick break. Right back.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, the Biden administration announced a multi-agency pricing strike force. Yep, they're going to take on corporate greedflation. You know, that thing that's been hurting so many working families. And look, it's time. It's about time. It's time to slay the Wall Street greed monsters and help Main Street for a change. And here to share some thoughts on if this is a good thing, if this is going to be helpful, I've asked our good friend Jeff Hauser to come talk with us. Jeff is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Their website, therevolvingdoorproject.org. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Love to be here.
So what is this? What is this strike force that was announced on Tuesday? And do you think this is a step in the right direction?
I think it's a step in the right direction, both substantively and politically. It's an effort by the Biden administration to make sure that different parts of the government are talking to each other so that they can take on excessive greed, excessive profits, basically corporations not making money because of innovation or you know, building a better product or providing a better service, but rather by cheating. Much of that will involve enforcement of the antitrust laws and other competition laws, but some of the government powers may exist within powers accorded to Health and Human Services Department, which oversees medicine, healthcare in this country, or the Agriculture Department in terms of food, or the Transportation Department. I think it's an all of government approach to greed, price gouging, and just the taking advantage of ordinary Americans by the worst corporations.
You know, since the quote unquote end of the pandemic, pretty much the entire Biden administration, I've been calling for the Senate or a senator or someone. And Bob Casey has done a really good job with his reports on greedflation. But for a while, I've been calling on our government to do something. You know, like the Truman, like Harry Truman, the commissions to go after greed in the military and the gouging that went on back then. To start some kind of commission to go after these folks who have just been gouging our eyes out. And this is, I think, a step in that direction. It's not a senatorial commission, but it's something, I think, right?
Yes. No, I think it's something. One of the biggest successes that the progressive movement had popululist movement in this administration was very strong appointments to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, and to the Justice Department's antitrust division.
Right.
They are looking into anti-monopoly, antitrust laws, and they have been turning that around for several decades. Corporations have been allowed to get away with murder because the principles of Robert Bork and other now dead influential so-called Chicago School economists and law and econ professors, they had undermined the anti-monopoly laws that had made this country great, the anti-monopoly laws that allowed small businesses to thrive and ensured that there was fair competition, which meant better prices for consumers and also more competition for workers. When you have consolidated industries, you have one or two or a very small handful of companies competing, it's not going to be good for workers either. But so these agencies, they're very small. Biden has gotten them larger budgets so they can hire somewhat more lawyers, but they are totally outmatched compared to the big law firms that big tech, big agriculture, and the other large corporate interests rely upon. But slowly but surely, there's been change. But it's not enough, and it's not been felt enough yet by the average American. And so the pandemic meant that our kind of already fragile economy got broken a little bit further. And the conditions of the pandemic with supply shocks, with trade routes shut down, and just getting a little erratic, that provided a great opportunity for all sorts of businesses to raise prices, even if their costs weren't impacted.
Yep.
Or even if their costs were impacted, to raise prices by two or three times as much as, ought to have been justified. But if, there are only a handful of corporations and they're all signaling in press releases to each other, hey, because of the pandemic, we're going to increase their prices a lot, they all can just agree, increase prices. And that's, where we've gotten. We didn't have inflation because of nature. We had inflation due to a messed up, unfair economy that corporate America had built. So Biden had people fighting back against this, but they're not enough people, and it takes time to do this through the courts. So you need every part of the executive branch to be fighting hard. You know, different parts of the executive branch have jurisdiction over different industries. We need each of those executive branch departments looking into each of the industries under their jurisdiction and seeing what sort of unfair practices are occurring. And I think this strike force will make it more likely they do it. And then politically, it's important to talk about it because Donald Trump plays the role of the populist, but he did not fight hard on behalf of small businesses. A lot of small business owners don't understand that. Yep. They don't know about antitrust. They don't know that Trump hired the Federalist Society elite big law revolving door jerks who weren't going to fight for them and that Biden's done a lot better. So it's up to all of us to explain that difference. But, you know, no one should be doing more to explain the Biden administration's record on this than the Biden administration itself. And they've honestly just done a terrible job of talking about it. I think some of this is that not everyone in the administration has been as on board with this agenda as others. And so it's great to have Lina Khan at the Federal Trade Commission and Jonathan Cantor as the antitrust chief at the Justice Department. But if you don't have the chief of staff at the White House, Jeffrey Zients, who's a rich businessman himself, if he's not fully on board, you're just not going to see this featured as much. And so hopefully this is a way to get out from under those weaknesses and to bring this good record to the American people.
No, this is, you know, this is what I talk about all the time. And that the fact that, yeah, I'm thrilled with the infrastructure improvements that are coming and the money that's been done there. I'm beyond thrilled with the manufacturing that we're reshoring and the investments that are being made there. But doing this work, going after these monopolies who control, you know, a handful of companies controlling entire industries so that they can gouge our eyes out like they've been doing without any accountability, this is also the work. Because look, the right's been saying, look, you know, Joe Biden did this. The inflation's because of Joe Biden. He did all of it. When the reality is, he's the guy who's trying to undo the system that has been gouging your eyes out. And I don't think there are enough people pointing that out. I don't know there are enough platforms saying that. And as you point out, if your chief of staff isn't totally on board, maybe you're not even saying it enough.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we thought Ron Klain was a much better chief of staff for Joe Biden. And last year under Jeffrey Zients has been a little bit rough for Joe Biden. Unfortunately, it's a pretty important year that we've had. So we hope that Jeffrey Zients can learn from what was going on before. But Jeffrey Zients was involved in a business that we found very troubling, which is representative of broader trends in the U.S. economy. During the Trump years, his investment company, they built out a business in the anesthesia delivery services. So this is basically if you go to a hospital and you need surgery, someone will give you anesthesia. That makes sense. It used to be those would be random individual doctors, and those doctors would make a contract with the hospital, or like they would deliver that service as an individual. And people grew to admire doctors in part for like how they did that. But, you know, the doctors didn't like to do paperwork and private equity smelled possible profit. And so they suggested, hey, why don't you guys build a business? And you build out a business. And so, you know, in a given metropolitan area, be it a large one or a small one, all of the anesthesiologists are working for the same private equity company. And what happens when one company is the one shop in town, like you need surgery and you haven't decided, like you don't know anything about what anesthesia delivery is like, you know, you need surgery. You're gonna get ripped off now because no, like this is the only way to get you anesthesia in your town. And this is where surprise billing came from.
Yep.
Because they realized that the best model for getting more money out of delivering anesthesia is to occasionally charge way too much money for it. Or charge people rates that they never agreed to, especially people who did not have insurance, who are the people who we most should be protective of. Because insurance companies, you know, have some ability to fight back, although not, it's, you know, not complete authority, ability to fight back. So yeah, this is happening across the healthcare industry. There's a reason why costs are so high in American healthcare compared to other countries. You know, we know about that in the course of pharmaceuticals and drug companies are outrageous. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg of the undeserved profits that are being earned in healthcare. And if we want to both address the budget deficit and provide more healthcare to people, it'd be good to get these undeserved profits out of our corporate rentier bosses.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I think if you were to go to any American on the street and go, you know, who does the anesthesiologist work for? They would probably say the hospital. I don't know. I think the last person they would think is a private equity firm on Wall Street.
Exactly. This is the, you know, great example of financialization, how the entire economy has become run by bean counters who are figuring out tax dodges or paperwork ways to trick people and make more money. They're not making more money in delivering anesthesiology by being better at anesthesiology. That's like a very old fashioned way to earn profits. The economy works better when people make more money by actually doing better work for people. And that's why we're fighting against financialization. We don't think the economy should be run out of Wall Street. We think experts in given business sectors should be the people in charge, and they should have fair competition from other experts and other business people, and, you know, let the best businesses win out.
So getting back to this strike force, you know, is this what this is about? Or, you know, the early response that I heard is it's, you know, about ending junk fees. It's about ending, you know, massive credit card fees. In fact, one of them I saw was, you know, the maximum fee they can charge on a credit card is like $8 or something. Because look, these what seem like small, minor fees actually add up to, you know, for a lot of people, hundreds of dollars a year, maybe even thousands of dollars a year, but billions for these companies. Is this the start of what you think will be getting us to the bigger places?
I think so. And so, yeah, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is doing great work of fighting back against credit card companies and banks who are inserting things into fine print that not even people who went to law school ever bother to read. And they've been using that to take advantage of people and nickel and dime them. And as you said, you know, a nickel here, a dime there, or in modern terms, you know, $8 here and $32 there, it starts adding up to billions of dollars done at scale, which is what the financial engineering wizards on Wall Street are very good at assembling, are companies that are well designed to harvest these kind of junk fees and convert them into profits. I think you've had aspects of the executive branch, like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that have been outstanding at this. You've had other parts, like the Health and Human Services Department, which have been very disappointing. And the Health and Human Services Department, by virtue of the fact that it is responsible for Medicare and Medicaid money, has an enormous amount of leverage over the healthcare delivery systems in this country. And we need to start getting HHS to think of itself as fighting for consumers. You know, it's been hard enough to get the Federal Trade Commission to be fighting for consumers after decades of bipartisan sluggishness. And Lena Khan's doing a great job, but it's hard enough doing it at a place that was designed to help consumers, but hasn't been. It's going to be even harder to turn a place like Health and Human Services, which is mostly thought about providing healthcare and working in conjunction with healthcare providers, to start fighting against corporate greed. But it's imperative that we do so. And I think the Biden administration is really beginning to understand an all of government approach to fighting against, you know, you can call them junk fees, you can just call them unwarranted profits. There are any number of ways you can wordsmith it, but it's basically fighting against unfairness in the economy, which should be popular. I think it is very popular, but we need to make American people understand that presidential elections are in large part about, are you hiring the people in your executive branch who are going to fight against unwanted corporate greed, or are you going to fight people who are in favor of it? Like, it's a pretty clear choice. And it's not about who has more energy when giving a speech. It's about who do you stand for, who do you hire, and what do they do in office?
No, and your point of getting all of government moving in the same direction and doing this work, I think, is really important. Especially when you look at the fact that, you know, the message around Trump, and I know I don't want to get you in a whole political discussion, but, you know, when you hear Trump talk about, you know, his way of going forward, the Heritage Foundations, you know, Project 2025, and they get this understanding of, you know, we need people marching in our direction. And I think Democrats need to do a much better job of getting government moving in a direction that actually helps working people and helps families and that, instead of, well, what's gotten us in the mess we're in right now, where corporate power is so outweighed and the revolving door, you know, the name of your project, benefits corporate America and not working people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they did not expect to win the 2016 election, especially once Trump was the nominee. And the right did not, therefore, assemble a group of people to go into government and, from my vantage point, do the most maximum harm. This time, they are confident. They are well-funded. And you referenced Project 2025. So they are cultivating and training up thousands of people whose job it will be to go into agencies like the Transportation Department and make sure they show more deference to Boeing. They're going to go into the Agriculture Department and show more deference to big agriculture. They're certainly going to go into the Environmental Protection Agency and make sure that the EPA is not protecting our drinking water, not protecting the air that we breathe. They are going to do this across everything. And eventually there's going to be another financial crisis because of it, because they're going to certainly go into the financial regulators and make sure that they can't protect the stability of the economy. They are coming. They are prepared. They have plans. The plans are dangerous. But the plans are in thousands of pages long in very esoteric minutia. And so it's going to take a lot of us talking about these issues for people to understand what Project 2025 means, what the corporate agenda is for 2025, and how the government's going to be turned on its head in 2025 if there's a change in administration.
Yeah, the simple narrative that I've been putting is Project 2025 is making patronage great again. Checking that Twitter account, making sure that you're a purist, a loyalist, and you're never going to do anything that dear leader doesn't tell you to do. That should scare everyone. But as always, Jeff, I appreciate the time. Great work over there at the Revolving Door Project. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Definitely. Looking forward to that.
Good stuff. Our good friend Jeff Hauser. Want to hear your thoughts. Is this a step in the right direction? Are we finally going to take on greed? Are we finally going to go after the people who've been gouging our eyes out since the pandemic? Sure hope so. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1857. That was the day the U.S. Supreme Court handed down one of its most infamous decisions. It was known as the Dred Scott case. Dred Scott had been born into slavery. He was owned by a military man named John Emerson. His military service brought Emerson from the slave state of Missouri to the free state of Illinois and then the free territory of Wisconsin. While in Wisconsin, Scott married. Emerson's career path then turned back to Missouri. A few years later, Emerson died. Scott attempted to purchase freedom for himself and his wife. When he was not successful, he took his case to the courts, claiming that his time on free soil should have granted him freedom. The Supreme Court decision was devastating for Dred Scott and for all who opposed slavery. In a 7-2 decision, the court ruled that as a black man, Scott had no claim on citizenship under the U.S. Constitution. The majority opinion left no ambiguity, saying Scott, quote, had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. But the court went even further. It ruled that the Missouri Compromise of 1820 was unconstitutional. This meant that, according to the court, Congress could not move to prohibit slavery in any U.S. territory. Reaction in the North by those who supported free labor was swift and angry. The Chicago Daily Tribune declared, "It is the first step in a revolution which, if not arrested, nullifies the Revolution of 76 and makes us all slaves again." The Dred Scott decision sharpened tensions over the question of slavery and marched the nation closer to civil war. Today's Labor History in 2 brought to you in memory of Carol Hillman, a passionate friend of workers and volunteer of the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's interesting that Jeff Hauser brought up getting government moving all in the same direction, all on the same page. You know, and look, you know, you remember after 9/11 how we said, you know, we got to get government talking to each other and, you know, protecting us, working, you know, for the common good. And, you know, obviously the person who's in charge of that at the very top, questionable. But this idea of using government to make people's lives better is something that I've been all on board with. Look, there are things that we do individually that I don't want government involved in, but there are things that are so big that individually we can't do it, and that collectively through our government we do. And this election really is going to be about what direction we take as a country. Never before in my lifetime have there been two candidates that are simple and easy to tell apart. I know they're all the same, you know, both Democrats or Republicans. No, this is very, very different. And the reason that I like Joe Biden so much is exactly what Hauser was talking about. Maybe not everyone's on board about moving away from neoliberalism on the Democratic side. Maybe not everyone is moving away from, you know, the old school Republican light, corporate light, DLC Clinton type Democrat. Maybe not thrilled about moving away from that because it's profitable, makes money for them. But, you know, it's not been great for working people. So the fact that Biden is really going all in on reshoring manufacturing, investment in infrastructure, you know, the kind of decisions that are coming out of the NLRB and the Department of Labor and the Federal Trade Commission, you know, holding up these mergers and stuff that are going to harm consumers and workers. A lot of really good stuff for working families. Never before have we seen such a difference. Because what we know is when Donald Trump, if he were to win, immediately he will start pushing for Schedule F, which means we're going to fire everyone in the federal government and replace them with Project 2025 folks. You know, good loyalists. Because they're honest about it. This is the part that it's infuriating to me. And if the left had a media infrastructure as powerful as what the right has built, maybe you'd have heard about it. Maybe you'd heard about, you know, making patronage great again. Maybe you'd have heard of, you know, the Heritage Foundation's plan and the vetting process of checking their social media to make sure that, you know, you've said the right things and that there's nothing in the past that could be misconstrued as negative towards your leader. Because understand what the Republicans are talking about right now is getting everyone on the same page to do a whole bunch of horrible stuff. You know, dictatorial stuff. And what Hauser said a moment ago is he's right. Nobody outside of me believed he was going to win in 2016. So they didn't do all the prep and all of the planning that they normally do to get people in certain areas to take advantage of opportunities for business interest and the donor class. So they didn't do anything, which left Trump to, you know, do what Trump does. You know, bring out the very best people who are now being all thrown under the bus because they had, you know, something of a conscience, some of them. This next round of people that they bring in, the true believers who know what they're getting into, they're going to walk into a Trump administration knowing full hearty well that their job is all about destruction, chaos, profit, and, well, authoritarian rule. They know because Trump is saying this stuff. And in our mainstream corporate control media, they kind of just laugh it off. Oh, he's making those statements again that, you know, he's going to be a dictator. He's making them statements again. And kind of just blowing them off without really understanding this guy's going to be dangerous to our democracy. The right-wing blogosphere, the blathersphere over there, they're saying that this will be the last open election. That when they seize power, they're going to fix things. They're going to make sure that there are massive barriers in front of people to vote. Go back to the original intent of that their Constitution thing that they love. Which, you know, means white landowning males are the only ones who can vote. I'm sure we forgot that. But they're grabbing onto this. They believe that this is going to be the last open election. They're going to fix all of what is wrong and have, you know, government walk in lockstep with that view. Now, the left and Democrats, they haven't done that. So to see President Biden say, look, you know, we want the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission, and we want all of these different agencies, you know, going after these big corporations and these monopolies and ensuring that competition is there, that consumers don't get screwed, that workers aren't cheated, that we treat people, working people, fairly. That there's some, and look, this is so 1960s, this kind of governance, and it's what we need. You know, this is why having an old guy, a good thing, because he remembers the 60s. He remembers the late 50s. He remembers the golden age of the American economy. He remembers what my grandparents built. And this idea that you're going to pass something down better. Better opportunities, better hope, better vision for the future. And that these corporations who have grown so large need to be held in check. And need to be, and look, I've been saying this for 2 years now. We need that Truman Commission who's going to go after the greed monsters, who's going to hold people accountable, going to pull them in to congressional hearings and grill them for the American people to see. You haven't seen that yet, or at least not enough. So maybe this strike force, maybe this is a step in the right direction, using the mechanisms of government to say, hey, maybe cut it out, or we're going to come get you. I'm hoping. I'm, again, always hopeful. But again, this comes back down to November and who we vote for. That's the important part of this. Because understand, what Biden is doing, the good stuff that is being done as we speak, can all be undone by a Republican majority, by a Trump presidency. And understand, they're already plotting. The think tanks are in full bad idea mode for the wish, the hope that dear leader gets in and they can enact all of the bad things they're thinking about. This election matters. It's that simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.